Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
One of the things that I enjoy about having a chance to fill in from time to time is I can check around and see if one of my favorite authors might be available for a conversation. And I mentioned a number of authors earlier in the show, and they're not favorites because of their connection to the Twin Cities. It just happens to be that that is a connection. They're favorites because I just enjoy what they write. One of those gentlemen, in this case a gentleman, is David Housewright, who's the first novel. Well, he's got a couple of series, including the Holland Taylor books. But along the way, and back 2004 or so, he started in another direction, a book called A Hard Ticket Home, about a St. Paul police officer who hit the jackpot, and depending on what you think of him, he did or didn't sell his badge, but instead he has been doing some great things. Rushmore McKenzie has been doing some great things ever since A Hard Ticket Home. And David Housewright joins me to talk about that and the latest. Hey, good afternoon, David. Thank you for making yourself available on this Saturday. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you, but then I'm nice and toasty warm. I'm not outside.
Let me ask this question. Do you have a particular place where, like, your writer's garret, where you sit while you're writing and just, you know, a cozy, comfortable spot?
I do, actually. I built an office in my basement, and that's where they're all written.
Well, so you don't need to be looking out a window. Does it help to not be distracted from looking out the window?
Actually, I have a very large window. The way my house is set up on a hill, I'm looking out on my neighbor's backyard.
Hey, tell people, if you can, a little bit about where the inspiration for Rushmore McKenzie came from.
Oh, wow, man, that gets complicated. Basically, I wanted a guy who could do a lot of adventures. I could branch out and write a lot of different kinds of stories. And so I wanted to create a character who is doing what he's doing because partly because he's bored, and partly because he actually thinks he's making the world a better place. He's not doing it because somebody knocked on his door and offered him a lot of money, like a PI would. He's not doing it because he was working the third shift and got a call and found a body on the floor of a restaurant or something.
Yeah.
And as a result, I can write a lot of dark stories. You mentioned A Hard Ticket Home. And then I could also write some lighthearted stories where maybe he's investigating an art theft or something like that that doesn't have a lot of dead bodies on the floor.
Well, that's got to be more upbeat. Hey, I know that there is a 21st novel in the series coming, I think, when is it? Probably June of 2024. Is that right? A Man in the Water? Or Man in the Water?
Yes. That'll be out in, and I don't have the actual pub date. They've neglected to tell me this, but I'll figure it out between now and then.
Okay. Well, anyway, that'll be in the series. Yet you managed to write and to overlap series at the same time because you continued with your other series at the same time that you were writing Rushmore McKenzie when you were still writing Holland Taylor. How do you do that?
Well, one of the things I do is, for example, I have another Holland Taylor book coming out. I haven't got a pub date. It'll be out this year sometime. It's called Girl in the Dumpster. Give you an idea where we're going.
Yeah, let's see. Yeah, let me think. What could that possibly be about?
And what I do is I have to get his voice in my head. I have, you know, those books are much, much darker than the McKenzie novels. And so what I'll do is I'll browse my previous books. I'll reread some of the stuff I wrote before and try and get the rhythms in my head and try and get his voice in my head as I'm plotting out the book. I will not write them both at the same time. That's crazy. But I know people who do that sort of thing, but I don't. I'll have to immerse myself in that character before I can actually start writing the book.
Which character are you more like, if I can ask that? Holland Taylor or Rushmore McKenzie? Which one is a closer reflection of David Housewright, the author?
Probably McKenzie, because he's a smart aleck. Because he's prone to annoying people just for the fun of it. His sensibilities are mine. He's a baseball fan. He's a jazz fan. He doesn't carry a gun with him everywhere he goes, unlike Taylor. So yeah. I guess I would lean more towards that character.
Okay, so how much, or is it actually fun to be able to work these protagonists into places with which you are familiar, whether it be, I picture, for people who don't know, Rushmore McKenzie's now wife, Nina, has a nightclub, which I picture as being the Commodore in St. Paul on Western. Am I close to an accurate description for that?
You're not too far off. Ricky's, her joint is basically a combination of three clubs. One of them, which doesn't exist anymore, which was the Artist Quarter in St. Paul. But there's a place on, I think it's Dale, called Sweeney's.
Sure.
And back when I was a kid and I was working in advertising, it was the Sweeney's Champagne Bar. And they used to have jazz. They used to have music in the upper floor. And that's where I first heard Rio Nito, for example, back in the, the 70s to early 80s? And so it's basically a combination of three places. But it is on Cathedral Hill. And in my head, it's not too far away from the Commodore.
All right. Well, these are the things I think that readers find enjoyable. I mean, I find all of this enjoyable, to tell you the truth, but I like trying to identify, trying to get in the car with Rushmore McKenzie and ride to the same places that he's going, whether it is some dive bar where somebody's going to clobber him from behind, or worse, in some cases, it just makes it more fun, I think. And I wonder how many readers tell you the same thing.
Oh, I get that a lot. one of my favorite things, if you want to use that word, is how people will send me emails. And they'll say, oh, I loved your latest book. I thought that was fabulous. But on page 147, you write that he's going east on Highway 55. I'm pretty sure you meant Highway 52. And I'm like, and my first thought is, damn it, how did that get by? But, yeah, I get that a lot. I've had people who have done, like, treasure hunts where they're trying to find a place that I created in a book by backtracking Mackenzie's steps. And I'm going, well, you know, that house actually doesn't exist. I kind of made it up. I mean, what am I going to give you a real address and you're going to knock on the guy's door and go, hey, Mackenzie live here?
How important is it? Mackenzie's closest friend, his boyhood friend, and who is still a St. Paul police officer. How important is it that that they have relationships, that any central character has a relationship that's that important in their life? Is it important?
I think it's very important. If you read an awful lot of mysteries and crime fiction like I do, especially the old stuff, you know, the Chandlers and the Hammetts and Ross McDonald, those guys, their characters really don't have a family. They don't really have a lot of friendships that appear in the books. And when I created Mackenzie, I purposely made sure he had a very large circle. Because you have to remember, basically what he's doing is he's doing favors for friends. And he needs friends. And the other thing is, Mackenzie doesn't have a family, per se. I mean, his mother died when he was a child. His father died, passed before the series began. And so his friendships with Bobby Dunstan and other people, that's his family. And that's one of the motivations for what he does, is he's basically looking for a place to belong.
Well, yeah, that's a good way to put it. I think about that when I think about some of the places he goes, some of the characters that he runs into, and some of the favors that he does. And I guess that's the best way to refer to them, as favors that he does for others. Do you know, do you have an idea, a pretty good idea, how a book is going to end before you begin?
Absolutely. I will not write the first word until I know what the last word is. Now, I don't mean to say I actually write the endings, but I know how the book ends before I begin. Absolutely. And you've read them yourself. Your listeners have read them, where they're reading a book and it's pretty good. And then they get to the ending and they go, what? And it's because the author, he's got 70, 80,000 words in the book, and he's got to wrap that sucker up, and he doesn't know how it ends any more than you do.
So you're right.
Unique endings. And I'm like, come on, man, you can't do that. Also, I think the ending of the book will tell readers what the book is about. But it also tells the writer what the book is about. And I don't mean just whodunit.
No.
I mean, you know, what is it you're trying to explore? What is it you want people to think about when they close the cover? And, yeah, we've all read those books where you get to the end and you're like, wait, what?
Yeah, well, I've done that. You're absolutely right. Where I have to go back, you know, like a chapter or two, or, you know, multiple pages, is like, well, where did this person come from, or what happened here? So, yeah, it doesn't seem to be built the way you would like to have it built. So, are you regimented in your? I mean, this is your job, is to write. So, do you treat it like a job? You get up in the morning and go to your workplace?
Well, not when I get up in the morning. I mean, you know, coffee doesn't drink itself. but no, I have a, I know when my deadlines are. I know what I'm doing. I know people, My process isn't as regimented as some. I know some people who get up and they will work from like 8 in the morning until 2 in the afternoon, or 2 in the morning until midnight or whatever. They will write 1,000 words a day or 3,000 words or whatever. They have a system, and that's what they follow. Mine is a little bit more flexible. Once I start the book, once I got it in my head and I know what I'm going to do, I'll try to write, $5,000. I'll try to write 5,000 words a week. And sometimes I'll actually do that. But I don't necessarily say I'm going to write for 6 hours today and 6 hours tomorrow.
Okay.
It's a little bit more lighter than that. Some days you sit down and you got nothing. And some days you sit down and it's like you're watching somebody else do it. It's just flowing that well. The trick is knowing you have to write the book, and it's not going to write itself. So get to work.
Get to work. Yes. It's the reason they call it a broom is because you have to push it. It's just like that. So, hey, I do enjoy what you do. And when people ask me, because I try to turn other people on to authors that I like and that I find the same way, this is how I came to you, David, as a very good friend of mine said, oh, here, read these. So I did. And then I went back to the beginning and then brought everything forward. But I think in maybe, and I don't say this about many, but maybe in Rushmore McKenzie's case, it really helps to have that foundation of the initial book, don't you think?
Not really. One of the things I pride myself in is that each book can stand alone. I make references to characters like, say, Bobby Dunston or Heavenly Petrick,
right,
where I make references to where his money came from. That's always pertinent to the story. You can jump in anywhere and move on. You don't need to go back and read the first 8 books to figure out what's going on in books 9, 10, and 11. So I kind of take pride in that. I know some people who don't care. I've had readers tell me, they grabbed number 5 or they jumped in at number 13, and then they went back and read them all forward, and that's fine with me. I mean, what am I going to do, argue with them?
Yeah.
But you don't need to do that. You can jump in anywhere and move forward.
Well, I hope that you will continue, and I will look now for, and according to what I see on a website, Man in the Water is in June, but I'm going to guess Holland Taylor, if you said coming out this year also, will be maybe before that in that particular case.
Well, I'm talking to these guys in Florida. I don't know. The problem is it's June. If the book was coming out in April or May, then I would hold Taylor off until September or October. Because, you got that distance between the two books. But
right.
I really honestly don't know what we're going to do right now. I hope to get it out this year. I hope to get it out at least by late fall, but we'll see.
Okay. All right. I'm not going to pressure you or hold you to it. And when I get a chance to be on the radio again, this is why one of the reasons I said this. I'll send you my address. One of the reasons I said this at the beginning of this half hour here is that I enjoy the chance to fill in is because it allows me to have on guests with whom I'd like to talk. And you're one of those, David, just because I'm a fan and I think it shows through. I hope it does because, then people who trust me will trust that I know what I like to read and they will like it as well. So
well, I appreciate it. And I'm a fan of yours going back to the 70s and 80s. I don't know if you know this, but back in the day when I was working in advertising, we met a couple of times. This is back when you were with the other station. And
I was multiple stations.
Anyway.
But yeah, Yeah, I worked for Hubbard for a number of years, and maybe that might have been the time. I don't recall. But David, so nice to have a chance to chat with you. Thank you for agreeing to be on here on this Saturday afternoon. I'll keep reading as long as you keep writing. Keep doing it.
I appreciate you. Appreciate it, John. Thanks for having me on.
Take care. Look for Man in the Water coming out maybe in June. More to come from David Housewright and Rushmore McKenzie.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
The details behind the Diddy indictment. Taylor Swift's stalkers. Jerry Lee trying to kill Elvis. Disgraceland dives into the dark side of entertainment every Tuesday. Follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
One of the things that I enjoy about having a chance to fill in from time to time is I can check around and see if one of my favorite authors might be available for a conversation. And I mentioned a number of authors earlier in the show, and they're not favorites because of their connection to the Twin Cities. It just happens to be that that is a connection. They're favorites because I just enjoy what they write. One of those gentlemen, in this case a gentleman, is David Housewright, who's the first novel. He's got a couple of series, including the Holland Taylor books. But along the way, and back 2004 or so, he started in another direction, a book called A Hard Ticket Home, about a St. Paul police officer who hit the jackpot. And depending on what you think of him, he did or didn't sell his badge, but instead he has been doing some great things. Rushmore McKenzie has been doing some great things ever since A Hard Ticket Home. And David Housewright joins me to talk about that and the latest. Hey, good afternoon, David. Thank you for making yourself available on this Saturday. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you, but then I'm nice and toasty warm. I'm not outside.
Let me ask this question. Do you have a particular place where, like, your writer's garret, where you sit while you're writing and just, you know, a cozy, comfortable spot?
I do, actually. I built an office in my basement, and that's where they're all written.
Well, so you don't need to be looking out a window. Does it help to not be distracted from looking out the window?
Actually, I have a very large window. The way my house is set up on a hill, I'm looking out on my neighbor's backyard.
Hey, tell people, if you can, a little bit about where the inspiration for Rushmore McKenzie came from.
Oh, wow, man, that gets complicated. Basically, I wanted a guy who could do a lot of adventures. I could branch out and write a lot of different kinds of stories. And so I wanted to create a character who is doing what he's doing because partly because he's bored, and partly because he actually thinks he's making the world a better place. He's not doing it because somebody knocked on his door and offered him a lot of money, like a PI would. He's not doing it because he was working the third shift and got a call and found a body on the floor of a restaurant or something.
Yeah.
And as a result, I can write a lot of dark stories. You mentioned A Hard Ticket Home. And then I could also write some lighthearted stories where maybe he's investigating an art theft or something like that that doesn't have a lot of dead bodies on the floor.
Well, that's got to be more upbeat. Hey, I know that there is a 21st novel in the series coming, I think, when is it? Probably June of 2024. Is that right? A Man in the Water? Or Man in the Water?
Yes, that'll be out, and I don't have the actual pub date. They've neglected to tell me this, but I'll figure it out between now and then.
Okay, well, anyway, that'll be in the series. Yet you managed to write and to overlap series at the same time because you continued with your other series at the same time that you were writing Rushmore McKenzie, when you were still writing Holland Taylor. How do you do that?
Well, one of the things I do is, for example, I have another Holland Taylor book coming out. I haven't got a pub date. It'll be out this year sometime. It's called Girl in the Dumpster. Give you an idea where we're going.
Yeah, let's see. Yeah, let me think. What could that possibly be about?
And what I do is I have to get his voice in my head. I have, you know, those books are much, much darker than the McKenzie novels. And so what I'll do is I'll browse my previous books. I'll reread some of the stuff I wrote before and try and get the rhythms in my head and try and get his voice in my head as I'm plotting out the book. I will not write them both at the same time. That's crazy. But I know people who do that sort of thing, but I don't. I'll have to immerse myself in that character before I can actually start writing the book.
Which character are you more like, if I can ask that? Holland Taylor or Rushmore McKenzie? Which one is a closer reflection of David Housewright, the author?
Probably McKenzie, because he's a smart aleck. Because he's prone to annoying people just for the fun of it. His sensibilities are mine. He's a baseball fan. He's a jazz fan. He doesn't carry a gun with him everywhere he goes, unlike Taylor. Yeah. So I guess I would lean more towards that character.
Okay, so how much, or is it actually fun to be able to work these protagonists into places with which you are familiar, whether it be, I picture, for people who don't know, Rushmore McKenzie's now wife, Nina, has a nightclub, which I picture as being the Commodore in St. Paul on Western. Am I close to an accurate description for that?
You're not too far off. Ricky's, her joint is basically a combination of three clubs. One of them, which doesn't exist anymore, which was the Artist Quarter in St. Paul. But there's a place on, I think it's Dale, called Sweeney's.
Sure.
And back when I was a kid and I was working in advertising, it was the Sweeney's Champagne Bar. And they used to have jazz. They used to have music in the upper floor. And that's where I first heard Rio Nito, for example, back in the, the 70s, the early 80s? And so it's basically a combination of three places. But it is on Cathedral Hill. And in my head, it's not too far away from the Commodore.
All right. Well, these are the things I think that readers find enjoyable. I mean, I find all of this enjoyable, to tell you the truth, but I like trying to identify, trying to get in the car with Rushmore McKenzie and ride to the same places that he's going, whether it is some dive bar where somebody's going to clobber him from behind, or worse, in some cases. It just makes it more fun, I think. And I wonder how many readers tell you the same thing.
Oh, I get that a lot. One of my favorite things, if you want to use that word, is how people will send me emails. And they'll say, oh, I loved your latest book. I thought that was fabulous. But on page 147, you write that he's going east on Highway 55. I'm pretty sure you meant Highway 52. And I'm like, and my first thought is, damn it, how did that get by? But, yeah, I get that a lot. I've had people who have done, like, treasure hunts where they're trying to find a place that I created in a book by backtracking McKenzie's steps. And I'm going, well, you know, that house actually doesn't exist. I kind of made it up. I mean, you know, what, am I going to give you a real address and you're going to knock on the guy's door and go, hey, McKenzie live here?
How important is it? McKenzie's closest friend, his boyhood friend, and who is still a St. Paul police officer. How important is it that that they have relationships, that any central character has a relationship that's that important in their life? Is it important?
I think it's very important. If you read an awful lot of mysteries and crime fiction like I do, especially the old stuff, you know, the Chandlers and the Hammetts and Ross McDonald, those guys, their characters really don't have a family. They don't really have a lot of friendships that appear in the books. And when I created McKenzie, I purposely made sure he had a very large circle. Because you have to remember, basically what he's doing is he's doing favors for friends. And he needs friends. And the other thing is, McKenzie doesn't have a family, per se. I mean, his mother died when he was a child. His father died, passed before the series began. And so his friendships with Bobby Dunstan and other people, that's his family. And that's one of the motivations for what he does, is he's basically looking for a place to belong.
Well, yeah, that's a good way to put it. I think about that when I think about some of the places he goes, some of the characters that he runs into, and some of the favors that he does. And I guess that's the best way to refer to them, as favors that he does for others. Do you know, do you have an idea, a pretty good idea, how a book is going to end before you begin?
Absolutely. I will not write the first word until I know what the last word is. Now, I don't mean to say I actually write the endings, but I know how the book ends before I begin. Absolutely. And you've read them yourself. Your listeners have read them, where they're reading a book and it's pretty good. And then they get to the ending and they go, what? And it's because the author, he's got 70,000-80,000 words in the book, and he's got to wrap that sucker up, and he doesn't know how it ends any more than you do.
Yeah, you're right.
Unique endings, and I'm like, come on, man, you can't do that. Also, I think the ending of the book will tell readers what the book is about. But it also tells the writer what the book is about. And I don't mean just whodunit.
No.
I mean, you know, what is it you're trying to explore? What is it you want people to think about when they close the cover? And, yeah, we've all read those books where you get to the end and you're like, wait, what?
Yeah, well, I've done that. You're absolutely right. Where I have to go back, you know, like a chapter or two, or, you know, multiple pages, is like, well, where did this person come from, or what happened here? So, yeah, it doesn't seem to be built the way you would like to have it built. So are you regimented in your, I mean, this is your job, is to write. So do you treat it like a job? You get up in the morning and go to your workplace?
Well, not when I get up in the morning. I mean, you know, coffee doesn't drink itself. I know when my deadlines are. I know what I'm doing. I know people. My process isn't as regimented as some. I know some people who get up and they will work from like 8 in the morning until 2 in the afternoon, or 2 in the morning until midnight, or whatever. They will write 1,000 words a day, or 3,000 words, or whatever. They have a system, and that's what they follow. Mine is a little bit more flexible. Once I start the book, once I got it in my head and I know what I'm going to do, I'll try to write, $5,000. I'll try to write 5,000 words a week. And sometimes I'll actually do that. But I don't necessarily say I'm going to write for 6 hours today and 6 hours tomorrow.
Okay.
It's a little bit more lighter than that. Some days you sit down and you got nothing. And some days you sit down and it's like you're watching somebody else do it. It's just flowing that well. The trick is knowing you have to write the book and it's not going to write itself. So get to work.
Get to work. Yes. It's the reason they call it a broom is because you have to push it. It's just like that. So, hey, I do enjoy what you do. And when people ask me, because I try to turn other people on to authors that I like and that I find the same way, this is how I came to you, David, as a very good friend of mine said, oh, here, read these. So I did. And then I went back to the beginning and then brought everything forward. But I think in maybe, and I don't say this about many, but maybe in Rushmore McKenzie's case, it really helps to have that foundation of the initial book, don't you think?
Not really. One of the things I pride myself in is that each book can stand alone. I make references to characters like, say, Bobby Dunston or Heavenly Petrick,
right,
or I make references to where his money came from. That's always pertinent to the story. You can jump in anywhere and move on. You don't need to go back and read the first 8 books to figure out what's going on in books 9, 10, and 11. So I kind of take pride in that. I know some people who don't care. I've had readers tell me, you know, they grabbed number 5 or they jumped in at number 13, and then they went back and read them all forward, and that's fine with me. I mean, what am I going to do, argue with them?
Yeah.
But you don't need to do that. You can jump in anywhere and move forward.
Well, I hope that you will continue, and I will look now for, and according to what I see on a website, Man in the Water is in June, but I'm going to guess Holland Taylor, if you said coming out this year also, will be maybe before that in that particular case.
Well, I'm talking to these guys in Florida. I don't know. The problem is it's June. If the book was coming out in April or May, then I would hold Taylor off until September or October. Because, you know, you've got that distance between the two books. But
right.
I really honestly don't know what we're going to do right now. I hope to get it out this year. I hope to get it out at least by late fall, but we'll see.
Okay. All right. I'm not going to pressure you or hold you to it. And when I get a chance to be on the radio again, this is why, one of the reasons I said this, I'll send you my address. One of the reasons I said this at the beginning of this half hour here, that I enjoy the chance to fill in is because it allows me to have on guests with whom I'd like to talk. And you're one of those, David, just because I'm a fan and I think it shows through. I hope it does, because then people who trust me will trust that I know what I like to read and they will like it as well. So,
well, I appreciate it. And I'm a fan of yours going back to the 70s and 80s. You know, I don't know if you know this, but back in the day when I was working in advertising, we met a couple of times. This is back when you were with the other station. And
I was multiple stations.
Anyway. But
I worked for Hubbard for a number of years, and maybe that might have been the time. I don't recall. But, David, so nice to have a chance to chat with you. Thank you for agreeing to be on here on this Saturday afternoon. I'll keep reading as long as you keep writing. Keep doing it.
I appreciate it. Appreciate it, John. Thanks for having me on.
Take care. Look for Man in the Water coming out maybe in June. More to come from David Housewright and Rushmore McKenzie.